becomes a self-fulfilling prophecy. This program ultimately is a call to action. It is addressed to all men and women who wish to participate actively in the process of their evolution, as well as to psychologists, parents, teachers, and those responsible for the culture of organizations. This program is about what is possible. There are realities we cannot avoid. One of them is the importance of self-esteem. Regardless of what we do or do not admit, we cannot be indifferent to our self-evaluation. However, we can run from this knowledge if it makes us uncomfortable. We can shrug it off, evade it, declare that we are only interested in practical matters, and escape into baseball, or the evening news, or the financial pages, or a shopping spree, or a sexual adventure, or a drink. Yet, self-esteem is a fundamental human need. Its impact requires neither our understanding nor our consent. It works its way within us, with or without our knowledge. We are free to seek to grasp the dynamics of self-esteem or to remain unconscious of them. But in the latter case, we remain a mystery to ourselves and endure the consequences. Let us look at the role of self-esteem in our lives. By self-esteem, I mean much more than that innate sense of self-worth that presumably is our human birthright, that spark that psychotherapists and teachers seek to fan in those they work with. That spark is only the anteroom to self-esteem. Self-esteem, fully realized, is the experience that we are appropriate to life and to the requirements of life. More specifically, self-esteem is confidence in our ability to think, confidence in our ability to cope with the basic challenges of life, and confidence in our right to be successful and happy, the feeling of being worthy, deserving, entitled to assert our needs and wants, achieve our values, and enjoy the fruits of our efforts. To trust one's mind and to know that one is worthy of happiness is the essence of self-esteem. The power of this conviction about oneself lies in the fact that it is more than a judgment or a feeling. It is a motivator. It inspires behavior. In turn, it is directly affected by how we act. Causation flows in both directions. There is a continuous feedback loop between our actions in the world and our self-esteem. If I trust my mind and judgment, I am more likely to operate as a thinking being. Bringing appropriate awareness to my activities, my life works better. This reinforces trust in my mind. If I distrust my mind, I am more likely to be mentally passive. When my actions lead to disappointing or painful results, I feel justified in distrusting my mind. With high self-esteem, I am more likely to persist in the face of difficulties. With low self-esteem, I am more likely to give up or go through the motions of trying without really giving my best. If I persevere, the likelihood is that I will succeed more often than I fail. If I don't, the likelihood is that I will fail more often than I succeed. Either way, my view of myself will be reinforced. If I respect myself and require that others deal with me respectfully, I send out signals and behave in ways that increase the likelihood that others will respond appropriately. When they do, I am reinforced and confirmed in my initial belief. If I lack self-respect and accept discourtesy, abuse, or exploitation from others as natural, I unconsciously transmit this, and some people will treat me at my self-estimate. When this happens, and I submit to it, my self-respect deteriorates still more. The value of self-esteem lies not merely in the fact that it allows us to feel better, but that it allows us to live better, to respond to challenges and opportunities more resourcefully and more appropriately. The level of our self-esteem has profound consequences for every aspect of our existence. How we operate in the workplace, how we deal with people, how high we are likely to rise, how much we are likely to achieve. In the personal realm, it helps determine with whom we are likely to fall in love, how we interact with our spouse, children, and friends, and what level of personal happiness we attain. There are positive correlations between healthy self-esteem and a variety of other traits that bear directly on our capacity for achievement and for happiness. Healthy self-esteem correlates with rationality, realism, intuitiveness, creativity, independence, flexibility, ability to manage change, willingness to admit and correct mistakes, benevolence, and cooperativeness. Poor self-esteem correlates with irrationality, blindness to reality, rigidity, fear of the new and unfamiliar, inappropriate conformity or inappropriate rebelliousness, defensiveness, overcompliant or overcontrolling behavior, and fear of or hostility toward other people. High self-esteem seeks the challenge and stimulation of worthwhile and demanding goals. Low self-esteem seeks the safety of the familiar and undemanding. The more solid our self-esteem, the better equipped we are to cope with troubles that arise in our personal lives or in our careers. And the quicker we are to pick ourselves up after a fall, the more energy we have to begin anew. The higher our self-esteem, the more ambitious we tend to be, not necessarily in a career or financial sense, but in terms of what we hope to experience in life, emotionally, intellectually, creatively, spiritually. The lower our self-esteem, the less we aspire to, and the less we are likely to achieve. Either path tends to be self-reinforcing and self-perpetuating. The higher our self-esteem, the stronger the drive to express ourselves, reflecting the sense of richness within. The lower our self-esteem, the more urgent the need to quote-unquote prove ourselves, or to forget ourselves by living mechanically and unconsciously. The higher our self-esteem, the more open, honest, and appropriate our communications are likely to be, because we believe our thoughts have value and therefore we welcome rather than fear clarity. The lower our self-esteem, the more muddy, evasive, and inappropriate our communications are likely to be because of uncertainty about our own thoughts and feelings and our anxiety about the listener's response. The healthier our self-esteem, the more inclined we are to treat others with respect, benevolence, goodwill, and fairness, since we do not tend to perceive them as a threat, and since self-respect is the foundation of respect for others. We tend to feel most comfortable, most at home, with persons whose self-esteem level resembles our own. Opposites may attract about some issues, but not this one. High self-esteem individuals tend to be drawn to high self-esteem individuals. We do not see a passionate love affair, for example, between persons at opposite ends of the self-esteem continuum, just as we are not likely to see a passionate romance between intelligence and stupidity. Note that I am speaking of passionate love, not a brief infatuation or sexual episode which can operate by a different set of dynamics. Medium self-esteem individuals are typically attracted to medium self-esteem individuals. Low self-esteem seeks low self-esteem in others. Not consciously, of course, but by the logic of that which leads us to feel we have encountered a soulmate. The most disastrous relationships are those between persons who think poorly of themselves. The union of two abysses does not produce a height. It is not difficult to see the importance of self-esteem to success in the arena of intimate relationships. There is no greater barrier to romantic happiness than the fear that I am undeserving of love and that my destiny is to be hurt. Such fears give birth to self-fulfilling prophecies. If I enjoy a fundamental sense of efficacy and worth and experience myself as lovable, then I have a foundation for appreciating and loving others. I have something to give. I am not trapped in feelings of deficiency. But if I lack respect and enjoyment of who I am, I have very little to give except my unfilled needs. In my emotional impoverishment, I tend to see other people essentially as sources of approval or disapproval. I do not appreciate them for who they are in their own right. I see only what they can or cannot do for me. I am not looking for people whom I can admire and with whom I can share the excitement and adventure of life. I'm looking for people who will not condemn me, and perhaps will be impressed by my persona, the face I present to the world. My ability to love remains undeveloped. We have all heard the observation that, if you do not love yourself, you will be unable to love others. Less well understood is the other half of the story. If I do not feel lovable, it is very difficult to believe that anyone else loves me. If I do not accept myself, how can I accept your love for me? Your warmth and devotion are confusing. They confound my self-concept, since I know I am not lovable. Thus, even if I consciously disown my feelings of being unlovable, even if I insist or try to insist that I am wonderful, my poor self-concept remains deep within to undermine my attempts at relationships. Unwittingly, I become a saboteur of love. I attempt love, but the foundation of inner security is not there. Instead, there is the secret fear that I am destined only for pain. So I pick someone who inevitably will reject or abandon me. Or, if I pick someone with whom happiness might be possible, I subvert the relationship by demanding excessive reassurances, or by venting irrational possessiveness, or by making catastrophes of small frictions, or by seeking control through subservience or domination, by finding ways to reject my partner before my partner can reject me. Everyone knows the famous Groucho Marx joke that he would never join a club that would have him for a member. That is exactly the idea by which some low self-esteem people operate their love life. If you love me, you obviously are not good enough for me. Only someone who will reject me is an acceptable object of my devotion. Note that it is not always necessary to destroy the relationship entirely. It may be acceptable that the relationship continue, providing I am not happy. I may engage in a project called struggling to be happy or working on our relationship. I may read books on the subject, participate in seminars, attend lectures, or enter psychotherapy with the announced aim of being happy in the future. But not now. Not today. The possibility of happiness in the present is too terrifyingly immediate. Happiness anxiety, as I call it, is very common. Happiness can activate internal voices saying, I don't deserve this, or it will never last, or I'm riding for a fall, or I'm killing my mother or father by being happier than they ever were, or happiness is only an illusion, or nobody else is happy, so why should I be? What is required for many of us is the courage to tolerate happiness without self-sabotage, until such time as we lose the fear of it and realize that it will not destroy us and it need not disappear. One day at a time, I will tell clients, see if you can get through today without doing anything to undermine or subvert your good feelings. And if you fall off the wagon, don't despair. Pull yourself back up and recommit yourself to happiness. Such perseverance is self-esteem building. Self-esteem creates a set of implicit expectations about what is possible and appropriate to us. These expectations tend to generate the actions that turn them into realities, and the realities confirm and strengthen the original beliefs. Self-esteem, high or low, tends to be a generator of self-fulfilling prophecies. Self-concept is destiny, or more precisely, it tends to be. Our self-concept is who and what we consciously and subconsciously think we are. Our physical and psychological traits, our assets and liabilities, possibilities and limitations, strengths and weaknesses. A self-concept includes our level of self-esteem, but is more global. We cannot understand a person's behavior without understanding the self-concept behind it. People sabotage themselves at the height of their success all the time. They do so when success clashes with their implicit beliefs about what is appropriate to them. It is frightening to be flung beyond the limits of one's idea of who one is. If a self-concept cannot accommodate a given level of success, and if the self-concept does not change, it is predictable that the person will find ways to self-sabotage. Poor self-esteem places us in an adversarial relationship to our well-being. The question is sometimes asked, is it possible to have too much self-esteem? No, it is not, no more than it is possible to have too much physical health or too powerful an immune system. Sometimes self-esteem is confused with both.